The weather is getting a little warmer, which can only mean one thing. We are just around the corner from another busy and joy-filled celebration season. You know, weddings, graduations, Mother's and Father's Day. Yep, it's that time again. And just in time to help you save for all the outfits and gifts you'll need is the Macy's Friends and Family Sale, the one you wait for. Get an extra 30% off brands that almost never go on sale, like Levi's, Calvin Klein, Tommy Hilfiger, Nike, Gap, Hotel Collection, Lego, and more. Plus, free shipping on anything over $25. April 25th to May 5th, Macy's.com and in-store.
Buying your first car can make you feel like a superstar as it's a big purchase, but it can take time to get there. Intuit is the financial platform that helps everyday people prosper. Whether you're trying to manage your money or trying to run a business, Intuit gives you the confidence to take control of your finances so you can live your best life. Intuit helps you take control of your finances through products like TurboTax, Credit Karma, QuickBooks, and MailChimp. Intuit has helped 100 million people live their best financial lives. Visit Intuit.com, I-N-T-U-I-T.com, to start living yours. Let's get into it.
Nowadays, a lot of these big companies pretend to care about our communities and issues with nothing more than lip service. State Farm is the opposite. They're actively investing in programs and initiatives that help educate in financial literacy, give early career advice, and grow Black-owned businesses, thus leading to generational wealth, which helps protect the future of our communities. Seeing our communities grow and thrive is something they care deeply about. They want to build a future that we all can be proud of. State Farm understands that representation alone doesn't mean authenticity, that it takes a good neighbor to sponsor programs like the AXO, a year-long program that recognizes and rewards high school students for their academic and cultural achievements, and to fund programs like Project Ready, a national Urban League program committed to the educational achievement of Black and brown youth that to date participants have been awarded over $11 million in scholarship offers. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities and can have a long-lasting impact. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hey, when the time comes to plan your next big getaway, know they got a destination idea for you. Orlando. Just think about it. The thrills at their 15 world-class theme parks, followed by awesome outdoor adventures, amazing food festivals, and top-notch dining spots. Orlando has all that and much more than you'd expect. In Orlando, anything is possible if you can imagine it. Plan your escape today and save at visitorlando.com.
Looking for hair removal tools that not only deliver smooth results, but also empower you with a sense of complete control? Enter Conair Girl Bomb, your secret weapons for smooth, sleek results made just for women. From the ultimate Girl Bomb grip and professional grade blades, you don't have to compromise and settle for less. Conair Girl Bomb equips you with the precision and power previously reserved for men's grooming tools. So take your hair removal routine to the next level with Conair Girl Bomb. Available at ConairGirlBomb.com or a retailer near you.
Welcome to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast. A weekly conversation about mental health, personal development, and all the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia. For more information or to find a therapist in your area, visit our website at therapyforblackgirls.com. While I hope you love listening to and learning from the podcast, it is not meant to be a substitute for a relationship with a licensed mental health professional. Hey, y'all. Thanks so much for joining me for Session 129 of the Therapy for Black Girls podcast. October is National Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and I thought it was important for us to revisit this topic as Black women continue to be disproportionately impacted by domestic violence. For this conversation, I was joined by Dr. Shanita Brown. Dr. Brown is a licensed professional counselor, speaker, educator, and trainer that fosters transformative and empowering dialogue about intimate partner violence and mental health wellness. With over 10 years of experience in the clinical mental health field, she is a servant leader,
dedicated to breaking the silence and empowering change to foster the next generation of advocates and leaders. Dr. Brown and I chatted about how you can recognize the signs of domestic violence, why it's important to understand domestic violence in the context of power and control as opposed to anger management, how you can support a loved one who may be in a relationship with an abusive partner, and she shared tons of incredible resources for anyone who would like additional help. If you hear something that resonates with you while listening, please be sure to share it with us on social media using the hashtag TBGInSession. Here's our conversation. Thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Brown.
Thank you so much for having me, Dr. Joy. It's definitely an honor and privilege to be here with you.
Yeah, I'm really happy you were able to join us because I think we really need to, you know, continue having this conversation around domestic violence. And I think what happens a lot of times is that people aren't even always aware in their own relationships that there may be a presence of domestic violence. So can you tell us how somebody might even be able to recognize this?
Yes, that's a great question. So what really defines this abusive relationships and tactics? It's a common thread of power and control. So it's this intentional pattern of behavior used by an abuser when one partner tries to maintain power and control over another partner, right? And so that looks like someone who may be extremely jealous, right? Who a partner may be trying to check their cell phone, their social media, or email, or insisting that a partner text when they arrive or when they leave for work every day, or when you may hear someone saying, I feel like I'm walking on eggshells around their partner, isolation from your family and your friends, always feeling like they're afraid or appearing to be afraid when they feel like they can't go to work, they can't go to school, they can't go to social events because they're afraid that it may upset their partner. These are really controlling tactics, and these are red flags of domestic violence.
And I think it's really important that you gave us such a variety of ways to recognize this, right? Because I think sometimes people just think it's physical, right? So the person is hitting them,
right?
When really, obviously, abuse can be all of these things that you've named plus more, I'm sure.
Right. So this domestic violence, and sometimes you may hear intimate partner violence. And so really, and it can happen to anyone, Joy. It can happen to all cultures, all backgrounds, people who are married, people who are unmarried, heterosexual, people in the LGBT community, wealthy, the poor, religious, non-religious, all ethnicities. But the key takeaway here, like you're saying, is this power and control, and it's physical violence, emotional violence. And that emotional abuse is one where they're silent wounds, right? You can't see the emotional scars. And that causes just as much damage as physical abuse, or sometimes more, because that is lingering, that lingering effects of the emotional abuse.
Mm-hmm. So can you go in a little more depth about the emotional abuse, what that might look like?
The emotional abuse is that when people may say that I feel torn, name calling, they begin to think that what they are hearing, they begin to think that that's part of who they are. It leads to mental health challenges. It leads to anxiety, this irrational thought pattern. It leads to depression. It leads to maladaptive or unhealthy coping strategies, such as turning to substance abuse, things of that nature. So that emotion abuse and emotional wounds is really damaging. And I find that is much more damaging than physical abuse.
And I'm guessing it would also be probably a little harder to recognize.
It is hard to recognize, because when you have the conversation, you can't see that wound. So if you're with someone, you may be sitting to someone, or maybe working, or have a family member who is enduring domestic violence. You can't see that physical scar, but it's that name calling, that's the belittling, you know, putting somebody down that they're enduring every day. And it could be for years that you may endure emotional abuse. And it isn't what people say the physical abuse, but that emotional abuse that they are dealing with every day that is damaging to one's psyche.
Mm-hmm. So Dr. Brown, you also mentioned, because I think something that also happens is that people aren't quite sure whether a behavior is their partner like really caring about them and their concern, or is it abuse? So you mentioned like having to text when you leave or when you get back from work in the evening.
Right.
And so I could see some people saying like, oh, that is just my partner caring about me. So how would you know whether something like that is a sign of abuse or whether it's just your partner being concerned?
This is a great question because you want to think of what is healthy and what is unhealthy, right? So again, we have to examine what is that thread, that pattern of abusive and power and control behavior, that intentional pattern. You have to tell me who you're talking to. Or if I didn't text you, why you didn't text me? Or, hey, it's one thing to say, text me when you get to work because I care about your well-being, right? But there's a difference with saying somebody that's very controlling, you need to text me every day or this is going to happen. Or you need to text me today because I'm very concerned or this may not happen. So there's that power. It's that abusive, intentional pattern of behavior. That's the difference between texting every day or just a check-in.
So you're really looking at, like you said, the pattern. And, you know, if this is the only thing that's happening, then it could just be like a cause for concern. But if this right. is something that's present with the name calling and right. you know, maybe some physical abuse, then you can more clearly see the picture.
Absolutely. Putting someone down because they didn't text or, you know, making someone feel bad about themselves or, you know, well, you're crazy because you didn't do this or you didn't text me or things of that, you know. So it's this pattern, right? You're going to find that pattern. And a lot of times people can't see the pattern and you have to point it out. You have to ask the question, what are you seeing? Mm-hmm. Right. And then when you ask the question, what are you experiencing? What's happening in your relationship? And then people begin to say, wow, I never thought that this was a form of domestic violence.
So Dr. Brown, has it been your experience that people will maybe come into counseling with you to maybe figure out like how they can work on the relationship with their partner and then you're able to kind of show them this pattern?
Yes. So I find quite often when I am working with clients and my initial intake and doing a very thorough assessment, you know, what's happening in your relationship, you begin to ask the questions, what are you experiencing? Do you feel safe? Sometimes they don't feel safe. And then you be asked, what are you experiencing? And then you have what I find very helpful is showing people the power and control wheel, which was developed by the Deloof model, which helps with people looking out that at the core of the wheel is power and control, right? And so you have coercion, you have threats, you have intimidation, you have economic abuse. And when people begin to look at the power of control, it resonates with them. They may say, wow, I am experiencing them. And you ask the question, what are you experiencing that you see on that wheel? Oh, yeah, they do put me down. Or they do control what I do. Or they control what I wear. Or they limit my outside involvement. Or they're very jealous. So I do feel like I'm walking on eggshells. And then it clicks. That light bulb goes off for them. And say, wow, I never know this was domestic violence. All this time, I just thought they loved me or they were trying to show me that they were concerned, and I never thought that this was domestic violence.
Mm-hmm.
It is very hard. So you have to have tools to help people see that what you're describing isn't healthy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would imagine that that would be even more difficult for someone who maybe has come from a home where mm-hmm. they've seen this with their parents or, you know, with their loved ones growing up, and they don't necessarily know that all relationships don't function in this way.
Absolutely. The first relationship, the first image of relationship starts at home. So that sets up the relational template for people. And so they begin to think this is normal. This is all I've ever known. This is what I've seen, as you mentioned, Dr. Joy. But when they come in saying, I want some help. I want to feel safe. I'm not really sure. I don't really want to end the relationship, but maybe let's talk about this anger management. And you begin to educate them and they really understand that this is not an anger management issue, that this is a overall pattern of abusive and violent behavior, then they begin to really rethink what they're in. And sometimes they're not ready to leave immediately, and that's okay.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit more about the distinction between this not being an anger management issue and the domestic violence?
So, you know, I want people to really understand that abuse is not an anger management issue, right? So people who are experiencing an anger management issue, they're going to go off on their boss. They're going to go off on their cousin, their friend, or coworker, or random person. But abuse is carefully targeted at one person, right? So again, it's that overall pattern of abusive and violent behavior. And that is not an anger management issue. That's the difference. There are controlling behaviors that are really the biggest red flags that you look out for in relationships.
That is such an important distinction, Dr. Brown, because it also makes me think about how often you will hear people who have stories of being abused by their partners, but then everybody else in their life is like, what are you talking about? They're so nice. They're so charming. They're so XYZ, right? But it really goes to this crafting of a character where nobody else can kind of see what's going on inside the home.
Absolutely. And again, so it is, that's why domestic violence is not an anger management issue, right? It's this control, this pattern of behavior. And you begin to talk to someone, you'd be able to recognize and hear, they can tell you, well, it happened during this time. It happened again. It happened this time. It happened this time where they always put me down or they make me feel guilty. Or sometimes they make me feel guilty about my children. Or, you know, they say that the abuse didn't happen, or they say that sometimes I cause something to make the abuse happen, and that's never the case. But it's that pattern of behavior, that pattern of controlling behavior.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of what you're talking about is gaslighting, right? Yeah. So something that has kind of gotten more talk in, I think, recent months is coming up in more conversations. Can you talk a little bit more about what gaslighting is and what that looks like in the relationship?
Yes, well, gaslighting is when, you know, and a partner will make the other partner think that they're crazy, that it really didn't happen, that there's something, that they're the cause of it, and maybe minimizing what's happening. And that is really the form, that power of control, right? That pattern. You begin to think that maybe this didn't really happen. No, I didn't really hear that. And they begin to think, well, after a while, that, you know, this really isn't abuse, or I am crazy, or there's something wrong with me, or I'm making it up. And really, there's nothing really wrong with them, but that's the manipulative behavior, right, of gaslighting and what happens in that situation when one partner begins to think that, hey, I am somehow contributing to this, or I am crazy, or, you know, something is really wrong here, or nothing's really wrong with me. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I want to hear, if you can, Dr. Brown, a little bit more about like the pattern or the course that this takes, because it usually does not start off so obvious, right? So an abuser wouldn't necessarily start off by saying you can't go to your mom's on the weekends or whatever. It usually starts much smaller and then progresses. Can you talk a little bit about what that progression looks like?
Yes. Yeah, so in doing the research of domestic violence, and you have heard the term of, you may hear of the cycle of abuse or a cycle of violence. And recent research has changed that there really isn't a cycle of violence. There really isn't in one, right? Because no one gets into a relationship to really say that they're in this cycle that's somehow contributing to it. But what happened, you may see that an abuser may be nice at one point, what you may say like the honeymoon phase, and then it begins to escalate. And then you may see a little bit more, just call it this gaslighting or this form of psychological manipulation. And then maybe having some sort of planting this doubt in the victim or survivor's mind of what they are experiencing. Maybe then begin to question their perception of the relationship. Then it begins to add a little bit more fuel to it. And then it becomes very explosive. And then it repeats itself. So on one hand, it is a cycle. On one hand, it isn't. Because it's mainly this pattern of abusive behavior, if that makes sense, Dr. Joy.
So what is the cycle piece that is not quite accurate?
The actual term of the cycle of violence.
Got you. So the pattern is pretty consistent,
yeah.
But mm-hmm. calling it a cycle isn't the most consistent anymore.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Got you. Okay. Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so are there any warning signs or things that you should be looking out for kind of in the beginning phases of a relationship that may kind of tip you off that this person may be abusive?
A partner who is extremely jealous, mm-hmm. The isolation, putting you down, I would say making a partner feel bad about themselves. Some of the name calling, intimidation, destroying property, somehow saying that, well, I wouldn't have done this if you would have just listened to me.
Mm-hmm. So that difficulty taking accountability for any of their actions.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's so important for people to understand that abuse is never your fault,
mm-hmm.
right? It is never anything that you have done. You know, it is important for the perpetrator or the abuser. Sometimes the terms are used interchangeably. They're held accountable for their actions. Mm-hmm. And a lot of time that doesn't happen. And then we end up what we call a lot of victim blaming.
Yeah.
Well, what did you do? What were you wearing? or what, and it's never the case. And we have to really change that to placing the accountability on where it belongs, and that's the abuser.
Mm-hmm. And I want to hear your thoughts, Dr. Brown, about why you think we jump to the victim blaming so often. Like, why is it so hard for us to believe that people could be being abused?
I think, me personally, I think because overall in society, we have this culture mindset where men are in control and they're the dominant gender, and women don't have a voice. And so I think women aren't believed. And so we're always finding ways to look at what are women doing or what have partners doing in the relationship, and not look at a way to kind of change that story. So it's important to look at what we're saying first. What is our response? Like, really stop when you hear about a situation. How do I respond in a way that is not victim blaming? You know, that, you know, a victim can never do anything to call someone to hit someone. It's important to look at how do we hold each other accountable and how we hold that perpetrator accountable for their behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's deeply rooted in our society. I really think it is.
Yeah. So you already alluded to this a little bit, Dr. Brown, but another complicated part of this is, you know, someone does realize that they are in an abusive relationship and then maybe it's trying to figure out whether they're going to stay in this relationship or not.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times on the outside looking in, right, again, people are quick to say, well, why don't they just leave? Why don't they just get out? But of course, this is a very complicated, complex kind of a decision. So can you talk with us a little bit about what that decision-making process might look like?
Dr. Joy, this is a very good question. Thank you so much, because we are so quick to judge people. Well, I wouldn't have done that. I can't believe there is still in that. I would have been gone, right? But with domestic violence, it's so complex. There's so many reasons why a victim would stay. There may be children involved for economic reasons. They're actually afraid. I mean, there's a lot of fear here. And then if they think about leaving, that risk of their lives become more at risk for death. So we think about financial support, children, poverty reasons, being the breadwinner, having nowhere to go. Actually, love is a reason why some people may stay. They think this is actually love. So it is not something so quick where we can pull them out. Hey, girl. Hey, guy, let's come on and get out this relationship. It is very risky. Mm-hmm. It is very deadly when we're talking about leaving an abusive relationship. So that has to be thought out. It has to be planned, and it has to be all things have to be considered when we're talking about leaving an abusive relationship. It is not easy.
Is the research still consistent in talking about how dangerous it is? Like, that is the most dangerous time
when a partner
decides to leave.
Mm-hmm. And it takes 7 attempts.
Yeah.
The research says it takes 7 attempts to try and leave before they have successfully left that relationship. 7 attempts.
Mm-hmm.
I want people to know it is not an easy situation. And so I applaud people when they are trying to leave the situation or trying to take those steps. And you have to connect with people and connect with community resources who are trained to do this work in Safety Planet.
Mm-hmm. So can you talk about that a little bit? Like, okay, let's say I have made this decision to try to get out of this relationship. What kinds of things or resources do I need to connect with to try to figure out what my plan is going to be?
Yeah, so it's one, talking to a domestic violence agency or people who are trained in Safety Planning. I'm talking to a trusted family member who will provide support and not additional victim blaming. Or talking to faith-based communities that will offer support versus trying to tell you to stay in that relationship, right? So you want to connect with people who will understand what you are going through and can help you safety plan, right? If you have children, collecting documents such as your birth certificates, social security cards, having money in a separate account. So all these takes time, having a night bag packed for your children and packed for yourself, and having a plan in place when you're getting ready to leave that situation. Yeah, definitely connected with a domestic violence agency, yeah, to help with safety planning.
And most counties have this, correct? Like, we'll have some kind of agency that is designed to help with this type of effort.
Absolutely. Every state has a coalition for domestic violence and sexual violence, and then connecting you with that agency, yeah, for safety planning.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That would be the first place I was in. And working with victim survivor, connecting them. I'm doing the work as well, but also connecting them. We work in collaborative collaborative. It's a collaborative effort in safety planning. And it may take several sessions. It may not get done in that one initial session. It's going to take several until that person is say, I'm ready.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And having them, empowering them to make the decision.
And how can friends and family be supportive at this point?
Right. This is another great question, too, because oftentimes I hear people say, my family don't get me, or my pastor told me to stay. And so, one, we have to always be aware of the complexity of domestic violence, that it is not easy for a person to leave. We want to always be concerned about their well-being, about their safety. So I would tell people, if you're concerned, say, hey, I'm concerned about your well-being, instead of trying to say, you need to leave, right? And so if you're telling them you need to leave, you're doing the same thing that an abuser is doing. You're telling them, you're controlling them, but walk with them. I am here to support you. I may not know what this is like, but your well-being is a concern for me. I love you. I care about you. Here is the hotline. I am here to walk with you when you are ready. That's very supportive to helping someone in that situation. Getting them flyers or brochures, connect them to the 800 hotline or to a shelter, to an agency, but never go in or lead in with trying to tell somebody what to do in that situation, because you become part of what they're already dealing with is a controlling situation.
Yeah. And I have, you know, heard people talk about like it is just really important for you to be there,
right,
and to let them know, you know, if you ever decide to leave, I got you.
Absolutely.
Right. Like so that you, that even maybe family and friends can become a part of the safety planning if there is a go time.
Right. And just be there to listen. Just be there to listen and be available. Mm-hmm. I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
Non-judgmental environment. Create a safe space. Yeah.
So, Dr. Brown, can you talk about what therapy might look like for somebody maybe who is either deciding whether they're going to leave the relationship or maybe somebody who has left the relationship? Like, what kinds of things might you be working with them on in therapy?
It just depends on how they show up in that session. It shows up what stage they are in. They could be that I'm thinking about leaving, or I didn't know I'm dealing with this and now I've learned the term. So a lot of times, again, it goes back to education on what domestic violence is, right? And then providing them with the tools such as the power and control wheel, helping them to identify that things that they have been experiencing, it resonates with them. And then it may talk about, you know, they may be dealing with anxiety, they may be dealing with depression. We may talk about, so how have you been coping with this domestic violence? You may begin to hear things such as, well, I begin to drink more, or I'm doing some other things that are not so helpful. So it just depends on how they show up in the session and when they're ready to leave the relationship. But when they are ready, we begin to talk about safety planning. And that is several sessions in regards to taking that step to safety planning.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's important to pay attention to as well, because I think some people may be worried that if they go to a therapist and they are in a domestic violence situation, that the whole therapy will be focused on getting you to leave the relationship.
Absolutely not.
When that is not the case.
That is,
or at least it should
case.
Not be the case.
It should not be the case. But it depends. Okay, Dr. Joy, it depends, right?
Okay.
So let's pause. It depends. So if someone is in an active, I would say, if they're in a situation that we should always be concerned about their safety and well-being, right? So if someone say, I'm afraid, right? Or it's happening to my children, then it begins to, you know, work with them, or should we have to report, right? Or report an issue, thinking about the well-being of the children, or walking them through. So it just depends. Also, leading that person to a shelter. Plenty of times I've said, let's talk about ways to talk about your safety, right? And sometimes they would say, I'm going to go to the shelter, and the shelter will work with them. But it's always thinking about the safety first of that particular client when they're presenting it.
Yeah. Right. Of course.
Actually, and so sometimes it's helpful to talk about relational patterns, right? The upbringing and what did you see? A lot of times, you know, I've spent working 6 months with people just thinking about looking at relationship patterns. And then they get to the point of, okay, what do you want for yourself? You know, and making note of, I may have seen this. Maybe this is all that I have known, but I'm ready to change that narrative. I want better. And understanding they're not to blame for that. So it's just a process, you know, it's just a process. So it just take one day at a time, one session at a time. And so when people are ready to leave, you know, we are empowering them. We are giving them the tools to do that and make that decision, empowering them.
Mm-hmm. And I'm curious also, kind of going back to your comments about the emotional abuse, right? Because mm-hmm. I would imagine that that would be some significant work probably in therapy when people have yes. been made to believe or not even trust their own thoughts, you know, because there has been gaslighting or, you know, really taking a hit on their self-worth. So what kind of work might you be able to do with them in therapy to really target some of those concerns?
Yes. And so I have utilized a variety of blends of cognitive behavior therapy, really helping with the thought patterns, irrational thinking. And also I have used some relational culture theory, right? We're just really helping them with understanding growth, fostering relationships, and understanding how, especially for African-American women, how systems of oppression have contributed to multiple experiences of oppression and discrimination and racism, how they're more at risk for experiencing domestic violence. For example, if you're going to say we're going to refer them to an agency, it's a possibility that they may get discriminated against because of intersecting identities. And these are real things that we have to understand why Black women are such at risk for domestic violence when it comes to systemic oppression and racism and the complexity of it and how domestic violence shows up for them compared to a white woman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I know in working even just with students, you know, there is sometimes a hesitation, like mm-hmm. if there's going to be a report made or, right. you know, that you have to look at that too, because it feels like a betrayal almost to the community, like, oh, I'm going to put this person in jail or something.
Absolutely.
So even that becomes a bigger priority than their own concern and welfare.
Right. And that goes back to the result, again, of historical oppression.
Yeah.
And present day racism and how African-American women may be less likely to report or seek help, awareness of discrimination and the negative stereotype of how African-American men have been treated, dealing with police brutality. These are all factors, and that can discourage a woman from seeking help for domestic violence. And then that contributes to the high rate of domestic violence, right? They're not going to report. I don't want that to happen. I don't want to be another. I don't want to contribute to how Black men are treated because of what I have endured, right? So they somehow take that responsibility on. They don't report.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what are some of your favorite resources related to this topic, Dr. Brown, for anybody who needs to read more about this or is interested in learning more about this?
One of my favorite resources, the book I help, again, goes back to the education piece, is a book called Why Does He Do That? By Lundy Bancroft. And I have found that book very enlightening, but also on my clients and people that I serve, I found that, oh my God, this book has really enlightened me. It has really opened up my eyes to what I am experiencing. And there's a name for it now, right? I didn't know this. But we have to understand the shame and the stigma attached to domestic violence, the same as we have with mental illness. And so there's a lot of shame and attached to it. So, but when they begin to read the book, or when we have the power and control wheel, they say, hey, now I feel educated. Now I feel empowered. Now I can begin to proceed with taking my voice back. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times it's about education. It's yeah. about reading. It's about helping you understand what you have endured, right? So that's one of my very first books that I go to. And then one of my favorite podcasts, I would say, is A Date with Darkness by Dr. Natalie Jones.
Mm-hmm.
And she is a licensed therapist and you know, who specializes in working with people trying to heal from relational abuse. In her work with narcissists and narcissistic behavior. And I find that as a good tool for people to really get education on tips in how to heal and develop healthy relationships. You know, we are all relational beings and we all desire relational contact and connection. But I think it's important to learn about patterns and learn how to have a healthy relationship. Yeah.
Perfect. Any other resources or websites that you want to share?
Yes. A website that I go to is the National Center on Violence Against Women in the Black Community, also known as UGIMA. And I find that very helpful because they have a strong voice on looking at and being taking a stand on violence against women in the Black community. And also, I would say A Call to Men, which is an international violence against women prevention organization that really promotes healthy manhood and in violence against women and girls. So these are two resources, and they provide a wealth of information for the African-American community. Yeah.
Perfect. And where can we find you online? What's your website as well as any social media handles you'd like to share?
Yes, my website is www.drshanitabrown.com. And you can find me on Twitter, Dr. Shanita Brown, Facebook, and Instagram as well, under Dr. Shanita Brown.
Perfect. And of course, we will include all of that in the show notes. Thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Brown. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Dr. Joy, for having me. It's been a pleasure.
I'm so glad Dr. Brown was able to share her expertise with us today. To find out more information about her and her practice and the resources that she shared, check out the show notes at therapyforblackgirls.com/session129. And please don't forget to share this episode with two people in your circle, as you never know who needs to hear the information. And be sure to share your takeaways with us either on Twitter or in your IG stories using the hashtag TBGInSession. Remember that if you're searching for a therapist in your area, be sure to check out our therapist directory at therapyforblackgirls.com/directory. And if you want to continue digging into this topic and meet some other sisters in your area, come on over and join us in the Yellow Couch Collective, where we take a deeper dive into the topics from the podcast and just about everything else. You can join us at therapyforblackgirls.com/YCC. And don't forget to check out our online store, where you can grab a copy of our guided affirmation track, breakup journal, or your favorite Therapy for Black Girls t-shirts, sweatshirts, or mugs. Grab your goodies at therapyforblackgirls.com/shop. Thank y'all so much for joining me again this week. I look forward to continuing this conversation with you all real soon. Take good care. Nowadays, a lot of these big companies pretend to care about our communities and issues with nothing more than lip service. State Farm is the opposite. They're actively investing in programs and initiatives that help educate in financial literacy, give early career advice, and grow Black-owned businesses, thus leading to generational wealth, which helps protect the future of our communities. Seeing our communities grow and thrive is something they care deeply about. They want to build a future that we all can be proud of. State Farm understands that representation alone doesn't mean authenticity, that it takes a good neighbor to sponsor programs like the AXO, a year-long program that recognizes and rewards high school students for their academic and cultural achievements, and to fund programs like Project Ready, a National Urban League program committed to the educational achievement of Black and Brown youth that to date participants have been awarded over $11 million in scholarship offers. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities and can have a long-lasting impact. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Looking for hair removal tools that not only deliver smooth results, but also empower you with a sense of complete control? Enter Conair Girl Bomb, your secret weapons for smooth, sleek results made just for women. From the ultimate Girl Bomb grip and professional-grade blades, you don't have to compromise and settle for less. Conair Girl Bomb equips you with the precision and power previously reserved for men's grooming tools. So take your hair removal routine to the next level with Conair Girl Bomb. Available at ConairGirlBomb.com or a retailer near you.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at CedarPoint.com.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that Healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.